This recording is a production of Faith Builders Resource Group. This recording was made at Reach 2022, a conservative Anabaptist ministry convention hosted by Faith Builders Educational Programs on March 24 and 25, 2022, in Lancaster, Pennsylvania.
Thank you, Vernon, and welcome to you here. I've been really blessed by the talk upstairs. I hope that was powerful to you. I'm sitting here just feeling a little overwhelmed by the things that Brother Gingrich shared with us. When I was 19, I went to Northern Youth Programs in Northwestern Ontario, and I worked at a place called Beaver Lake Camp, working with young people or children and young people from the Aboriginal community in Northwestern Ontario, Ojibwe and Cree Indian children, many of them off of reservations and living often lives that were pretty despairing and a lot of depression and spiritual darkness on the reservations where they lived. And so our ministry there was to minister to those young people and children. And so when I was 19, I worked at this Beaver Lake camp place, and it was beside Beaver Lake. And Beaver Lake was about a mile across the lake. And so sometimes between camps, when the children were gone and it was just the staff there, some of us guys would swim across the lake. It's kind of a little test of manhood. Can you swim across the lake without dying? But the camp director made us have someone in a canoe to go across and kind of paddle the canoe. And so if somebody in our group would get tired and unable to swim, you know, you could pick him up and put him in a canoe if you get cramps or whatever. But of course, you didn't want to do that. You want to swim the whole way across. And so that was kind of a common thing. Most summers, you know, some of us would time ourselves and try to see how quickly we can swim across from one shore to the other. The lake was about 100 feet deep in some places. And you know, how long would it take to swim across the mile or mile and a quarter across the lake? You know, a good swimmer could do it in maybe 40 minutes, and someone not so good, hour and a half. But that was something we did often, swim across the lake. One morning, my friend did something he wasn't supposed to do. He got up daylight in the summertime in northwestern Ontario. It's about 4 o'clock in the morning, 4:30, starts to get daylight. He got up at daylight while everybody else was sleeping, and he went down to the lake and dove in with the intention of swimming across the lake by himself. And as he started to swim, he's a good swimmer, athletic, and capable of swimming across the lake. He's done it before. But as he started to swim, he got into his swim maybe a quarter or a third of the way across the lake, and as often happened there in at the lake, fog kind of rolled in off the hill and kind of rolled in over the water. And within a few minutes, my friend was swimming in fog that he couldn't see 10 feet in front of his face. And so then he had been looking at the distant shore, but now where is shore? Where am I going? As he's swimming, am I swimming, you know, this direction, that direction? He also knew that sometimes that fog would lay there till lunch, depending on the weather or the breezes that blew or didn't blow. Sometimes that fog would roll in and lay there till noon. So this is, you know, 4:30 in the morning. How long can he last? Where is shore? Where am I going? I suspect that this story about a swimmer is a little bit like your life and my life. At some point or another, you're asking the question, why am I here? What am I doing? We have to answer this question, which direction am I going? The panic that you sometimes feel, and Stephen was talking about this as a 14-year-old. Couldn't you hear that question when he was talking about himself as a 14-year-old? He didn't know who he was or where he was going, right? And maybe as a 16, 18-year-old, there's a question that we all have to ask at some point Who am I and why am I here? Why are you here in your family? Why do you have, why are you a Burkholder or a Sensenick or a Martin or a Hoover or a Stolzfus? Why are you where you are in your family? Why are you in the youth group that God put you in? Why are you at the school where you've been privileged to go to get an education? Why are you in your church, in your community, in the town you live in? Why do you live in this country, in America? Why wasn't you born in Guatemala or Ukraine or another country? Why are you at this place in history, 2022, where we experience so many blessings but also challenges? Why are you here and what am I doing in your family? Why are you a Christian at this time in our, like, where is the shore? What am I doing in this? Do you feel that fog sometimes? As you try to swim through life, where is shore? Where am I going? Why am I here? Who am I? I want to talk about those questions and just share with you as a Christian, as someone who's attempted to follow Jesus with my life, share with you a bit of my testimony about what God has done in my life to kind of answer that question in the fog. Okay, when I was 19, I mentioned I went to Beaver Lake Camp, and the reason I went into service, volunteer service, was because my dad kind of pushed me to go into service. He had this crazy idea that, the United States government drafted men to go into war. This is World War II. My dad was the Vietnam conflict. He had been drafted. And he was a conscientious objector, so he went and served in a hospital, for our nation because he was drafted. He had to. And my dad's thought was, crazy idea, that as Christians, we should do it voluntarily. We should go and just give a year of service. I grew up on a farm in Georgia, and as a boy, all I wanted to do was farm. I wanted to take over the family farm. That was my goal when I was probably 12. And as I got older, I started moving towards that goal, and Dad was fine with that. But somewhere about 17 or 18, he started talking about this year of service junk. Go and take a year of your life. You can farm all your life. That's fine. But go take a year and serve the Lord. Our nation made people do it, but we should do it because we love the Lord. Crazy idea. I just thought he was talking, didn't really pay a lot of attention to him in the community and youth group church that I grew up in. Nobody did that. There was a few girls that went somewhere and taught school and whatever, but the guys never did that. Go into service? No way. And so I just kind of ignored him and sort of did what the rest of our community did. Until one day, there's a farm that comes up for sale, and I had a few cows in my dad's herd, and I'm thinking, my friend and I we're 19. We start talking big talk about buying this farm. And then start getting halfway serious about it. And Dad pulls me aside and says, "No, I'm serious. You can buy the farm. There's always going to be a farm for sale. There's always going to be an opportunity but I'm serious about the year of service." He's like, "I can't tell you what to do. You're 19, but if you do what I want you to do, you're going to go somewhere and take a year of your life and serve the Lord." I couldn't believe it. He's serious. I love my dad. I mean, we had our arguments. I was 17 and knew a lot more than he did, of course. Most 17-year-olds do, right? But by the time I was 19, I really did love the man, and I wanted to do what he wanted me to do. I mean, I wanted to respect him. And I was in this dilemma. What am I going to do? I have to go into service. So I was like, okay, well, to please Dad, I'll go into service. That's a great motivation to serve the Lord. I'm going to please Dad. So I started looking around. There wasn't very many opportunities. And I ended up in Northern Youth Programs. And by the time it all came down to it, I thought this would be fun. I was up for adventure. I'm going to, I lived in Georgia. We never saw snow. We're going where it snows 4 feet deep. I'm going to see moose. I'll get to cut firewood. I enjoyed running the chainsaw. This is going to be a great time. I'll see moose. Put in my year, go home and farm, was my concept. And I got to Northern Youth Programs, and experience a year that changed my life. I was a counselor at Beaver Lake Camp, 19 years old. I had a group of 12 boys that was given to me for a youth retreat weekend. The boys were 17, 18 years old, and they came to this retreat wearing black leather and chains and studs on their belts, just looking like tough guys. Rock and rollers, long hair, and had pain in their eyes and an outlook on life that I had never experienced before. One of the boys in my group for this retreat weekend snuck some whiskey in his bag and brought this whiskey to the weekend. You weren't supposed to have whiskey. This was a Christian camp. And he got drunk the one night, and he stumbled into my cabin. And the cabin was full. All the beds were full. The retreat had way too many kids. I was supposed to have a counselor in my group to help me with these boys. But there wasn't enough staff, and there was too many kids. And, you know, this boy came in, and I was sleeping on the floor, and he was sleeping on the floor, and all the beds were full. And he stumbled in there, tripped on my bed, fell over me, and threw up and passed out. I had never seen anything like that before. I was a farm boy that grew up, you know, pretty sheltered. I mean, I had my few experiences in life that were difficult, but I was pretty sheltered. And I was supposed to lead a little Bible study with this group of boys. I didn't know what to say. I remember getting up that Sunday morning while all the other boys were sleeping, and I go in the bathroom and look in the mirror, and what do I have to say in a Bible study to this group? Like, what do I'm not even living right myself. I'm just here because my dad, and I'm trying to please my dad. I want to get this over with. I don't have anything to say to these boys. And that experience changed my life. God used that year of working with boys and some of the best people in the Mennonite Church and Northern Youth programs. God used that year to lay a burden on me for troubled boys that has never left. Boys and young people. That year changed my life. In that year, I learned how to be flexible. I learned how to care about other people. I learned how to think bigger than myself and my little farm and my little goals. I learned how to say yes to the Lord. I learned how to fast. And I'm still not very good at that. But I learned how to pray and ask God to work in the lives of people I'm working with and work in my life. I learned how to say yes. That year, there was I kind of noticed that if I would say yes, and at that point it wasn't saying yes to God, it was saying yes to my leaders at the mission there. But if I would say yes to them, I noticed I would get to see more stuff, and I would get to go more places, and I would get to experience more adventure if I would just say yes. And so instead of going fishing on Saturday morning, Amos Ash came to me and said, "Hey, Brian, could you fill in the blank?" I would say, "Yeah, I can do that. It's my personal time." He knew that. But I learned to say yes that year. I'm 19. I don't have anything else to do. Right? Really, it's like I don't even know how to live life yet. So I just learned to say yes. When somebody said, "Can you go to Sandy Lake? Can you go to North Spirit Lake? Can you drive this group of people there? Can you pick up that person here?" I was a maintenance man. I was there to cut firewood. But if I got asked to do something, I learned to say yes. Yeah, I can do that. That'll fit in my schedule. And I want to challenge you to learn how to say yes. And if you learn to say yes to those opportunities that God puts in your life, and sometimes it's through the people who are mentoring you or leading you or your leadership, and sometimes you'll start to recognize God's voice too in that process. But if you learn to say yes, God will use your life. He will put a burden on your life of some kind. I don't really know what that is, but if He puts a burden, if you learn to say yes to the Lord, He will put something on your shoulders that you will carry, and you will never swim in a fog. You will, I think, I don't know when midlife happens, but you know the famous midlife crisis where, you know, a guy's in his 40s and don't know who he is. I don't think that's necessary. If you, as a young person, let God lay it on you and you take the burden he gives you and carry it through your life, you will know where you're swimming. You will always know where the shore is in the fog that is often life. And I think that comes through a burden. And that burden for me was obviously a burden for young people that are struggling or marginalized, young people who have obstacles in life that some of us haven't had. I remember, in just a couple stories here, Jeffrey was a boy that I had a privilege to work with at camp. When I interviewed him and his family in a little town, Renova, Pennsylvania, a little town in the mountains up in central Pennsylvania, he was with his biological dad and stepmom, his real mom had overdosed and died. His bio mom had overdosed and died, and his dad was still selling drugs. Didn't really use drugs, but he hustled drugs. And when I interviewed him that day, Jeffrey was a 9-year-old that couldn't hold still, just had lots of issues. While I'm interviewing and trying to show him pictures of camp and talk about the possibility of coming to camp, this boy is under the table, across the table, jumping over the sofa, kind of doing laps around the room, and about every third picture he would show up and look at it. But he's all over the place. He's kind of a disaster. There's no way that he can sit in a classroom. That boy came to camp. And for the first 6 months that he was at camp, he gave his group a run for their money. He made it hard for that group to show up to breakfast every morning. He couldn't make his bed. He couldn't even get dressed. I remember, Jeffrey, you would help the boy get dressed, and he would put his shirt on, and you'd think, okay, we're good now. And you turn your back to do something else, and all of a sudden he'd have his pants off again, or there was something in his sock that drove him crazy, or the tag on the back of his shirt was driving him nuts. He'd whip his shirt off and try to chew his tag off. For him to get dressed and get to the breakfast in the morning was an act of Congress. For the first while, until finally he started learning some things and becoming at peace with himself a little bit. The kid went through camp and left camp, went to our local high school, public high school. And in 12th grade, Jeffrey calls me up one day and he says, "Hey, I'm studying Spanish, and I would like to become a Spanish teacher." A high school Spanish teacher. I'm planning to go to Penn State and study Spanish. I have a project in 12th grade that I need to do, and I would like to come to the Christian Day School in Lock Haven and do like a 6-week Spanish course with the students there. I was on the school board, and that's why he had called me. So I talked to the teacher and whatever, we arranged this. And Jeffrey came to our little Mennonite school. My son was 14 years old, and took Jeffrey's Spanish class that helped my son, kind of piqued his interest in Spanish and in all things Hispanic. And they went, as part of their Spanish class, they learned to read a Spanish menu and to order Spanish or Mexican food. And they went to a Mexican restaurant. And the Spanish class, honestly, my son didn't actually learn Spanish, but he learned a few words of Spanish, and Jeffrey was his teacher. The kid that couldn't even sit still doing laps around the living room, Jeffrey was his teacher and taught my son a little something about Spanish. And then later, as an adult, my son, Derek, went to Mexico to serve for 2 years as a caregiver in an orphanage. And I'm pretty sure that Derek's interest in Hispanic things and the idea that my son could even learn Spanish when he went to Mexico was started by Jeffrey, this little kid that's really a loser. God's amazing the way he puts things together. If you'll just take the burden he gives you and run with it. Michael's story, Michael's a boy that came to camp. His dad was in prison, and he had an extreme amount of anger at his father, and that anger spilled over into everything else in life, his teachers, his mom, the rest of his family. And when he came to camp, it spilled over onto all the staff and boys that worked with him. And one day when I was working with Michael, Michael bit me in my arm and left a welt there that stayed for years. I'm not kidding. There was a welt in my arm from his teeth that stayed for years. Years later, this is probably 12 years later, Michael calls me one day and he said, I'd like to bring my family to camp and show them camp. He had a 9-year-old boy, 8-year-old boy. And he wanted to show his 8-year-old son kind of a little bit of his experience, what it's like to be at camp and whatever. Long story short, we decided that he could bring his son to camp. It was in the spring of the year, so it was almost Easter. And I asked Michael if he would share his story with all of camp and just kind of talk about his life for our Easter sunrise service. And so Michael came and shared kind of his story of his life, some things that he's learned. It was a story that he wrote on a piece of paper, and he kind of stumbled his way through it. He reads at about a fourth grade level, but he kind of stumbled his way through the story. And I sat there that morning before the sunrise service. This is 15 years later. I looked at my arm and I couldn't find the scar. It's amazing. It was there for years and I kind of forgot about it, but it was gone that morning. The Lord, if we'll just take what he gives us, does amazing things. And he brings healing physically, spiritually, and emotionally. I don't understand it. I'm just trying to hang on. Keith's story. Keith was a boy that came to camp, and his parents they had adopted him at an older age, and then after they got him, they kind of decided they had run out of energy, and his father, they had three biological children of their own, but they had adopted him, and his father never did really want to adopt him. It's mostly his mom's idea. And so when they adopted him, it was a little bit under protest by his dad. And then after these years of problems that Keith brought in their family, dad was saying, hey, I can't put up with this. I'm out. They had been married 35 years. And dad was saying, I'm going to leave. I didn't really want this boy in the first place. I can't stand this. He still loved his wife, but he was fed up with Keith. And that was kind of their desperation when they brought Keith to camp. And Keith came to camp, and dad said to me, it saved our marriage. Because Keith came to camp and got out of their house and gave him a chance to kind of refocus. He didn't actually leave after all. He stayed with his wife of 35 years, and they're still together. The things that God will do when you just pay attention and follow his burden. Danny's story. Danny was a boy that was, his father was a drunk. I got a chance after he graduated from camp, I got a chance to go to his wrestling matches. And he wrestled in the public high school system in Pennsylvania as a heavyweight wrestler. I'd never been to wrestling matches before, but he was into wrestling. He was pretty good at it. And nobody came to his wrestling. The rest of the kids at the tournament had family, friends, uncles, grandparents, whatever. Danny went alone, him and the coach, because there was no family that would support him. And he called me up different times. Would you come to this match or that match? And I got a chance to kind of support Danny and be Danny's sort of dad at his wrestling matches, because while everybody else at these tournaments had family, he had no one. The opportunities that God gives you. Stephen is a boy that came to camp. And when I went to his house for his original interview, he lived just over the hill, about a cornfield away from a good, beachy Mennonite church that knew nothing about this boy. But he was just over the hill from a really good church in Virginia. I know people from that church, but they didn't know he lived there. And this boy, Stephen, when he came to camp, his parents kind of used camp as a way to get rid of him. And after he was at camp for about a year, they sent him at his birthday. They sent him a birthday card and basically said, happy birthday, have a nice life. You know, you're not welcome back in our family anymore. He turned 18. And they basically said, you're not a part of our family anymore. And so he was stuck at camp with no home or no family. And there was a Mennonite family that took him in. Long story short, he got baptized, joined the church. And within a couple years, he's teaching the junior Sunday school class at his church. This is Stephen, who knew nothing about God's word when he first came to camp. I remember sitting in our chapels at camp, and you're telling simple stories about Noah and the ark and Daniel in the lion's den. And he's sitting there like a dry sponge. He had never heard the story of Noah and the ark in America, a half a mile from a good beachy church. He had never heard these basic stories that you and I heard since we're, you know, born. And Stephen now, through the hand of the Lord, is teaching Sunday school, the junior class of boys at his church, because we just kind of wake up and do the next thing that's in front of us each day and carry that burden, whatever it is that God lays on you. I'm encouraging you to follow the Lord. Serving God is an adventure. I didn't say it's comfortable or even fun, but it's an adventure. You'll never have to wonder what you're doing on planet Earth if you decide you're going to say yes to what God asks you to do in your life. Do you want a front row seat in what God is doing? Couple of verses that I want to share with you just real quickly. One is taken from the book of Joel, where the prophet says to beat your plowshares into swords. Our job as Christians is to take up this spiritual battle, to get in the fight. The devil is using half of the children in America. Of course, I talk about troubled children because that's the burden God laid on me, but he's going to lay something on you. I don't know what it'll be, but half the children in this country are growing up in a family where at least one of their parents is not present. That's a problem. That's a problem. And you could talk an hour about that problem, but it's time to go to war against that. The devil has taken family, God's institution to raise children, and destroyed it. And we need to fight that. We need to beat our plowshares into swords and fight that in a spiritual way. Take that burden. Stand in the gap. In Ezekiel, the prophet talks about the idea of standing in the gap for truth and righteousness, standing in the gap. And the idea of standing in the gap in ancient time, in old battle, you know, all the towns had a wall around them. And so if the army from outside the wall wanted to take the city, you know, the army in the wall, they would basically come to the city and try to beat down the wall or break down the gate, or else they would surround it for a year and cut off the water and food supply. But, you know, no hot-blooded soldier is going to sit there for a year and just look at a stone wall and wait till they starve or get thirsty. And furthermore, a lot of cities had water that they had inside the city or a spring or a well or something. So mostly what would happen in ancient warfare was the one army would come and they would find a weak spot in the wall around the city and beat that wall down so that they could get in the city and take the city. Well, the army that's inside the city, if they beat this wall down with a catapult or big sticks or whatever, the army that's inside the wall would try to throw rocks at them or shoot at them with arrows or whatever to try to keep them away. But if the wall was actually breached and there was a hole broken into the wall, what the army inside of the city would do is take your best man and ask him to step into that breach and fight off the army on the outside while the army inside tries to repair the wall. But that man would step through that hole in the wall and single-handedly fight off the enemy so that he could protect the city inside. And you know, that guy died. Everybody knew it. Till this was over, he could fight for so long, but he was going to stand. That's what this verse is talking about. That guy who stands in the gap on behalf of the Lord in the land. Are you willing to do that with your life? To stand in the gap, even if it costs you your whole life? And that might be, you know, that might be a financial thing. It might be a physical thing. You might actually die. You probably won't die. In fact, sometimes you wish you would have died. Dying seems easier sometimes. I know, sometimes I tell the chiefs that come to camp, that in the oldest group of boys, you know, they're 15 or 16, and sometimes they're as tall as I am. And the oldest group at camp, sometimes you think, till this is over, I might be dead. But then in our little group, you know, 9-year-olds or 8-year-olds, they're not gonna kill you. You just might wish you were dead. You know, that's what I'm talking about. Serving the Lord is an adventure, but it's not always fun. It's actually often kind of difficult. Are you willing to stand in the gap on behalf of truth and righteousness and whatever the Lord lays on you? Are you going to say yes to the Lord when he calls you to do something and stand in the gap on behalf of truth and righteousness in the land? The other scripture I want to challenge you with is taken from Acts. And this is a story where Peter was in the prison. And the angel came and opened the door and let him out of prison. The church was praying for him. You know the story, right? So the angel came there. And it's very interesting to me how the angel came to Peter. And he says to Peter, put your sandals on. Wow. Isn't that amazing? You know, the angel just opened this big door. The angel took the guards and put them under some kind of deep sleep where they couldn't see anything. The angel took the chains that were on his hands and feet and broke them off somehow. Certainly the angel could also put Peter's sandals on, couldn't he? Just pop them on. Chains go off, sandals pop on. But the sandals is something that he could do, right? That's the part, and the angels expected him to do what he could do. He could put his sandals on. He couldn't open the door. He couldn't make the chains fall off. He couldn't make the guards sleep. But he could put his sandals on. You do what you can do. What's in front of your face that's obviously something you can do, God is going to expect you to do it. And when you put your sandals on, then the doors will open. When you put your sandals on, then the chains will fall. When you just, you know, the angel slaps you and says, put your sandals on, put them on. And then the adventure will start. If you just do the thing that you can do that's in front, it's obviously I can do. I don't know what's going to happen next. Seems kind of foolish to put my sandals on. That door is still shut. But put your sandals on. When God asks you to put them on, put them on. Do that thing that's under your nose and move forward. Watch what God does when you just simply say, yes, Lord. So the question I have for you today is yes, Lord, or no. What are you going to do? What is your decision as you leave here today, as you hear all this stuff about God's kingdom and what God is doing around the world? Are you going to drive a Jeep over muddy mountain roads and take pictures of yourself doing it and post them? Or are you going to drive mountain roads to bring children to a vacation Bible school? Are you going to hike over some glorious hike that's on your bucket list of some great place that you want to see? Or are you going to go hiking with some kids that never got out very much? And are you going to take selfies of your adventures and post them online? Or are you going to work in an orphanage with kids who have never had any adventures, and their stories will make you cry, and you'll never think about taking selfies because there's too much other stuff going on? Are you gonna curl up in a blanket by a fire, by your cozy fire in your house? Or are you gonna carry blankets to a refugee whose home has been destroyed, and doesn't have a place to go, and doesn't have a safe circle of friends, family, and community that they can be safe? Are you going to, as you live your life, what are you going to do? Are you going to say yes, Lord, or no? Or are you just going to take care of your family and have your little safe circle of friends? Or are you going to step outside your comfort zone and help people who have no family and friends? There's a little card that you were given that says on one side, yes, Lord, and the other side says no. You can't say no, Lord. Do you know that? When God asks you to do something, you can't say, no, Lord. I'm not going to do that. I'm not equipped. I don't know anything. You can't say no, Lord. The Lord is not going to ask you to do something that doesn't make sense. He's not going to do that. When God asks you to do something, the only logical answer is yes, Lord, if you're going to serve him. If you want to just say no, Lord, you're not Lord anymore, right? When you say no to God's question for you or the thing that he's trying to lay on you, it's not no, Lord. It's just plain no. And you can do that. God gives you that choice. You can say no to the Lord, but then that's where you're at, right? He's no longer Lord of your life. If God is going to be Lord of your life and He asks you to do something, put your sandals on, stand in the gap, beat the plowshares into swords, whatever it is, He asks you to go somewhere, He asks you to go be a part of that kids club ministry, He asks you to try to figure out how to translate the Bible into another language. Oh my word, I can't believe these Bible translation people that are here. That looks so overwhelming to me. I can't even read English, let alone another language. Wow, that would be so hard. Are you willing to do something hard like translate the Bible and drag it over some hills to people that have never seen or heard God's word before? I don't know what burden the Lord is going to give you, but when He gives it to you, if He's the Lord of your life, your only answer is yes, Lord. If you say no, He's not your Lord. If you say no, Lord, you're kind of telling the Lord that He don't know what He's talking about. He don't know what He's doing. The Lord don't know what He's doing. Do you know how crazy it is to say no, Lord? It doesn't make any sense. He knows what He's doing when He asks you to do whatever He asks you to do. Your only logical answer is yes, Lord. So that's your choice. I invite you to carry that card around and think about it and pray about it and ask the Lord for direction in your life, for direction through the fog that is life. And your assignment is to say yes, Lord, or no. That's your options. It's that simple at some point. Thank you very much, and God bless.
Thank you for listening. All recordings from Reach 2022 are available from Christian Learning Resource, the campus bookstore at Faith Builders. To purchase additional recordings from Reach or other Faith Builders events, visit us online at www.christianlearning.org or call us at 814-789-4769.